That would be me. Dr. John Klimo is my guest. We're talking about suicide. His book actually is Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. We'll get back to him in a moment. Listen, I'd like to get email from you, all of you. Would love to get email from you if you have a story that you think I ought to get out on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, I'm all ears. Electronically, that is. You can reach me in one of two ways. I'm Mark Bell at AOL.com, or better yet, really, because it's a little bit bigger, ArtBell at Mindspring.com. That's ArtBell, ArtBell at Mindspring, MindSpring.com. ArtBell at Mindspring.com. Write it down when you get a moment. Jot me off a quick note. We'll get back to Dr. John Klimo and your questions for him in a moment. Just one very quick item before we go to the phones, and there are a lot of people waiting to ask you questions, Doctor. Rob in Little Rock, Arkansas wants to know, hey, Art, what that other guy wanted to know, the other Fast Blast, was when a mentally ill person dies, do they get better on the other side?
You're asking me that?
I am.
Okay. Well, I could think of no more rich place to get therapy, get healing, get alternative and complementary medicine for the soul, chicken soup for the complex spirits that we are, than over there, because there's such limitation and constraint and density and Three Stooges poking each other's eyes out over here on this earth plane, that when you get over there, there's beings that have been around quite a while and don't even need physical bodies anymore necessarily. And there's a lot of people ready to help and to heal and to point out meanings and to help one make one's own meanings in ways that it's hard to find people on that here. You don't just turn to on the bar stool in the bar and start up a conversation with someone and hope to get a lot of help. And if you are physiologically imbalanced, the brain chemistry or organic limitation to your information processing and your capacity to function psychologically and neurologically, you get over to the other side, and you don't carry all that over with you. You had that in this lifetime. That was what you were saddled with to experience and learn from. You get over there, you can look back on, you do that life review again and look back on it and say, okay, I was bipolar there. I was Down syndrome there. Now I'm here. What have I learned from that? What can I have to teach others now, and what do I want to do next?
All right, doctor, let's do it. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Dr. John Klimo.
Hi, Bell.
Hi.
Art Bell?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Kay Wilson. I'm from Manchester, Connecticut.
Yeah.
Now, I'm 64 and a half. I was sleeping, and I didn't realize I was sleeping. I woke up in my sleep to being in a house, and I thought, wow, this is looks like it's a farmhouse in Texas, and I don't like that architecture very much. So I wonder, what the heck am I doing here? So I went to the door, and I looked out on this long porch, and there was sun, and it looked like Texas, like rolling hills, burnt grass. And who comes along but this man up the side, and he walks up onto the porch, and he looks at me. He had a widow's peak, a little bit of a, and I'm thinking, is this somebody I know? Is this man alive? And I look at him, I said, no, he's not. He's not alive. He's passed on, but he's alive and there. So I thought, well, maybe it's my grandfather I never saw a picture of. So I looked at him very carefully. I'm very artistic. Looked at his eyes, his nose, his ears, his chin, and his hairline. And we looked at each other, and he never said a word.
Mm-hmm.
And then he turned around, and as he turned around, there was a glint of, you know, how he hadn't shaved. And my husband woke me up out of this dream and said, Kay, turn on the television set. The Columbia has gone down. And I went in there. I'm getting chills as I speak. I went in there. I turned on the television set. I hadn't gotten a chance. They hadn't shown the astronauts boarding, you know, the vessel as they usually do. I hadn't seen it anyway. And who should come down that ramp? I almost fell on the floor. Willie McCool. It was Willie McCool. He had a grayish-blue suit on, a white tie. I mean, a white shirt and a tie. It was him. Every single feature of it was him. And then I just, oh, my God. I was, you know, flabbergasted. So I called up my brother-in-law, who works for NASA in Colorado Springs, and I told him that the Columbia had disintegrated, and I was, you know, horrified. And, of course, and I got off the phone. But later on, I said to him, you know, I tried to figure out why Willie McCool would come to me. I'm a person who's been agoraphobic for about 20 years. Please pray for me in the name of God. I don't spend the rest of my life like this. But anyway, and, you know, I said, you know, maybe God was trying to tell me that there's life after death. And maybe God wanted me to tell my brother-in-law to please tell his parents that he is alive and well. And, you know, when astronauts come down, they don't always shave. That little glint of blondish stubble.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, those little kind of super real taste of evidence that, boy, this really has a convincing quality to it. What you're describing is a classic textbook case of what happens to probably millions of people, or we don't always hear from each other about it, but certainly hundreds of thousands, that we are visited in the discrete altered state, naturally occurring discrete altered state of consciousness called sleep, called dream sleep, that's a perfect window to be contacted, even if we're not naturally psychic or naturally channels. In this altered state of consciousness, we come out on another floor of the elevator. We're tuned to another frequency domain where experiences can happen and where communication can happen and meetings can happen. And so I think that you are describing having why he came to you. If you didn't know him, you might have been just it might have been opportune. The light might have been on in your house, so to speak, figuratively speaking. And he came there. I don't know the fine tuning on that, but I believe you from the sound of it, you did experience him. And you know, you might not write a book about it or get out of the agoraphobia, but maybe something, or you'll at least contact the thing about the brother-in-law or whatever. You might be moved to do something that dream starts a domino effect with, because there's something that you know in your bones is exceptionally real and convincing that you know from your own lived experience. And that's how most people who experience the paranormal and the non-ordinary, they don't need data. They don't need evidence. They have personal experience,
right.
And that's it. And you're a good example of that.
Okay. Dr. Walcard-Line, you're on the air with Dr. John Klimo. Hi.
Hi, this is Eric. I'm calling from the Phoenix, Arizona area.
And yes, sir.
I'm listening to you on StreamLink. Good afternoon to you, Art, in the Philippines.
And thank you.
To your guest, wherever he is, whatever the case may be.
Well, we're all disembodied to each other. We're all kind of acting like we're channel sources to each other.
Right, and what great technology is out there.
Yeah, right.
I listened to George's show on July 7th with guests Pamela Ray Heath with great interest.
Mm-hmm.
And the question I'm about to ask is one I fast-blasted to you earlier, but I don't know if you had time to read it, and I'm sort of dying to know. What would your guest advise to a person who, and actually what happens to a person who commits suicide as a way of seeking revenge on a person who wrongs them? So, for example,
oh,
a person
brother.
Says, I'll show this person regret, and bang.
Oh, brother.
Absolutely. That is a real glow in the dark classic theme of punishment. A whole percentage of suicides are done out of anger, and I'll show you. And also murder suicides, where you know the husband takes the children and kills them,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't kill the wife. Or the ex-wife, but that I'll show you, ex-wife. I have the kids for the weekend, and I'll kill them and then myself. And that's the ultimate message I can send you, gotcha. And then, of course, you get on the other side, and it ain't the end of the story. You weren't executed, essentially. You didn't execute yourself. Something continues on after that, and you live with the repercussions of that, the karma of it, and sooner or later, it's unfinished business. And
Doctor, would you think that people who do the kind of thing you just described are probably believers that it's a big blank, that there's nothing further at all, and that's how they do something like that?
Well, in that book that Pam and I did, I asked the question, the thought experiment: What if we knew on planet Earth, like tomorrow morning, somehow it happened that there was irrefutable proof that we survive physical death and that there is something like karma, or at least the survival of physical death part? How would it change life on Earth for those of us still here? And in the case of being so angered, so vengeful that you kill yourself to get back at somebody, to do the ultimate withholding, so to speak, of love and presence, then does that mean that you didn't think there was anything after, or that you don't give a hoot what's after, that you were so consumed by like the pain of that moment that it blows past any concern about repercussions or what's going to happen after that? I think it's a mixed bag. Some people do that punishment thing, taking their own life, knowing there's something after that. But what trumps it is the immediate emotional moment. And in other cases, I don't think they think there's anything else. It's like, I got nothing to lose, man.
Boy. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. John Klimo. Hi.
Hi. Good evening, Art. Good evening, Doctor.
Hi.
First, Art, I'd like to say congratulations to you and your wife and new family, and
all
the best to you. You're in my thoughts and prayers all the time because I've been where you are. But that's not why I called. I'd like the doctor's opinion about something that I had gone through, which was I had witnessed a presence, an entity, a ghost, and it actually talked to me without talking to me.
Yeah.
I forget what that's called.
Telepathically,
yeah. Telepathically. And what was going on was that people were in her space and she was waiting for her husband to die.
Mm-hmm.
And when I told them to move, everything was fine because she had been making noises. Everything was fine. And he passed on without any problem after that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't quite understand what I witnessed.
Well,
this was
like
a long time ago. This was in the early 70s.
Well, did you know the person?
No, I'm sorry, he's gone. Apparently so. It sounded as though he did. Yes.
Well, I mean, this sounds kind of clear that he was being engaged in a communication. He tuned into somebody who was waiting for someone to join him, sounded like, and why he was the recipient of it, if he might not know the spirit or the still living person, I don't know. Just like the earlier one, the agoraphobic woman with the astronaut dream, but there's not really anything to explain there, particularly, I don't think, except again, in a somewhat altered state of consciousness, we open ourselves to tuning to other channels, other frequencies, other wavelengths of the multidimensional universe's possibilities and communicative interactionism and presences of other consciousnesses and seats of consciousness. And once you've experienced it, it's very hard to have somebody disabuse you of the fact that, God damn, that happened. And it's realer than real very often. And it does seem to attest to the fact that some of us are on this side and some of us are on the other side, and he seemed to be privy to one person communicating to him about another person, and then it seemed to be verified afterwards that there was a smooth death into it to join. But by the way, it just made me think that with the extraterrestrial connection and the channeling and so on, that as you know, Art, and many of your listeners know, that the communicative modality of choice for most extraterrestrials in abduction and contactee cases is telepathy. And, and even though we're not normally psychic abductees and contactees, we seem to, in that sphere of influence, we seem to be able to automatically be telepathic. And so we all potentially have this capacity. So whether it's a telepathic connection across dimensionality or between life and death, or between different kinds of beings or densities or modes of consciousness, like with extraterrestrials, I think it's just part of a larger picture that of reality that enough of us are experiencing, and more of us are experiencing, that sooner or later it's going to contribute to a paradigm shift that eventually it'll back into, slowly and reluctantly, our sciences and our academic and intelligentsia community, who will have to admit that there's something to all these anomalies, these inexplicable things, because too many people are experiencing them at a level that is so meaningful and so undeniable. I mean,
clearly, Doctor, that gap is closing. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dr. John Klimo. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Okay.
I've been trying to reach you for years, and this is a very important that I reached you tonight. And I just told myself I had to reach you tonight.
All right. Well, you have. We don't have a lot of time, so go ahead.
Dr. Klimo?
Yes.
This is the thing. My mother passed May 7th in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
She had been ill, and almost a year later, my father passed.
Yes.
And this has just been really traumatic for me to get through.
Yes.
But I had a dream, 2 months after my father passed.
Yes.
And my father and I, let me premise say, we weren't really always close until near the time he passed.
Right.
In life. And I'm 50 now.
Mm-hmm.
And he was standing on the steps in our old living room with his arms crossed, and he had a stern look on his face.
Yes.
Then he smiled at me, and he said something like, "Your name stands for something." And then the smile went away, and that was it. 3 nights later, I'm sitting in another dream. I'm sitting on the same steps, and I can hear my mother is, behind me.
Yes.
She's talking really, really fast, but I couldn't understand a word she was saying.
Yes.
And I was just sitting there going, yes, I understand, I know, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one of them committed suicide, but my state of mind right now is just, I don't know what to think of either one of these dreams.
Well, I think it's very important that you have people to talk with, and me too. I mean, I'll be in your life any way I can if you want to continue to talk about these things. It's lonely to have neither parent in your life. I still have my mother, but she's pretty far gone, and my father's dead. And sometimes we're given experiences, especially in the dream state or in the unusual experiences, that we don't know what to do with, because science, the church of religion doesn't tell us, the church of science doesn't right. tell us what to think, you know.
All we Doctor, really how do people get hold of you? You must have some sort of email address.
Yeah,
or...
I've got a website, just www.johnklimo.com. There's no H in John, J-O-N-K-L-I-M-O.
Right, J-O-N-K-L-I-M-O, right?
Yeah, www.johnklimo.com. And there's an email on that, too.
There's email there, all right.
Yeah.
Let me give that again. Nobody ever gets it right away. www.john, J-O-N.
Yes.
No H, just J-O-N, Klimo, K-L-I-M-O.com. You
Correct.
Get there, and then you can, there'll be an email contact point
right,
there.
Right.
A lot of people are going to contact you, and they're going to have questions for you.
Is our listener still there?
No. We're coming up on a break right now.
Again, I was just feeling, my heart was feeling that, you know, that's unfit. He needs to be continually, have somebody there for him to listen and talk this out more. The severance going back into the void there of the darkness of the night makes me feel very unsettled. This is really not so much suicide prevention as it is just compassion, as I felt
right.
for you when you told me about your wife dying.
Hold it right there, Doctor. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. With 24 time zones worldwide, it's always coming up on 2 a.m. somewhere, isn't it? Morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. My guest is Dr. John Klimo, and his book, well, I guess the title says it all, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. And something that caller said called a question to mind, and that is, I wonder if people, under some circumstances, decide to die. I think it's true. I think they do. And I think I have evidence, and we'll be right back. As with that caller we had a little while ago, you so frequently hear, I mean, we hear all the time that a husband or a wife will pass away, and then in very short order, the partner also passes away. It happens very quickly, and it happens very frequently. And when my wife passed away, I went into kind of a shock state, and I had already lost some weight, which I had wanted to lose from my back, but I'm telling you, I went from 240 pounds down to around 200, and then Ramona passed, and I quickly slid to 185. And even after I got here to the Philippines, I still kept going down, and I got down below 180, and I began to scare myself, and things got better for me. Life took on reason to be, and I'm back up now to around 190. But I wonder, Doctor, if you think it's true that people actually make perhaps a subconscious decision to die and then do it.
Yes, I absolutely believe that. Absolutely. As a psychologist, I've been involved with doctoral students who've done research, and I've done my own research about what's called the higher self, the part of us that's in us that's more than just our ego or our normal personality or our bodies. And that higher self part of us is maybe connected to a larger wisdom and a larger understanding and a larger connectedness to the larger reality of things. And it's that part of us that might act in a kind of bittersweet way sometimes, like the higher self says, okay, the normal embodied day-to-day me, there's really no much more point to be here this time. I think I'm going to come back next time as an Indian, or I'm going to go over the other side for a while and cool my heels or whatever. But you're not just the part of you that's sitting here listening to me on the radio. And so that might be the frame of reference or the locus of decision making for some people. We say the unconscious. Well, you know, the Freudian unconscious or even cognitive psychology's notion of the unconscious is a kind of diffuse and limited, not very well understood. For me, the higher self is more like the angels of our better selves, the kind of the God within or the transpersonal part of us that may make those decisions. And it may have an omniscient or a larger understanding of things. It may be up in the kind of out of body, so to speak, almost like your spirit guide under yourself, that's looking at what's going on in this life and can see up ahead, can precognitively see when it's going to happen, how many more breaths you have, how much more work you have to do. Like a near-death experience person in the near-death experience being told by a spirit, you're not ready yet. It's not your time yet. You've got more to do. You've got to go back, you know, to the office or the schoolroom.
Yes. All right. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Dr. John Klimo. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi there. By the way, Art, your woman screener is very helpful and very courteous.
Oh,
very
good.
Nice. I'm a third-generation medium, and I also have a background in medical writing, so I'm kind of left brain too. But I've had a lot of experience in working with my clients, communicating with suicides who talk, well, they don't exactly talk about reincarnation, but they give me information about their future plans for coming back.
Yeah.
Not all of them are able to do that,
mm-hmm.
but it's not unusual. What I've found is they don't consciously, or let's say there's a feeling to me that they are not allowed to actually talk about this. Maybe they just don't want to, I'm not sure, mm-hmm. but I get more of an empathic or, let's say, a psychic sense. Mm-hmm. It's like what they're not saying that's
right.
important.
Good point.
And there's one particular instance where they seem to be mildly obsessive or very intensely focused on a particular child relative, usually. That's my clue that this is the one that they're going to be coming back through, that this child will be either a parent or a grandparent to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, in a way, act as a spirit guide to that child, mm-hmm. and kind of guiding them into the through their lifetime to the point where that child can be in the right place to produce a body, or maybe the next generation that will produce a body for this individual.
Yeah.
And in one case, this gentleman had committed suicide at 24. He left a four-year-old daughter behind. And I was talking, doing the reading for his sister and his mother. I knew nothing about any of this. It's just that, you know, he came through. And I thought it was interesting after the fact that it was mentioned to me that he had a four-year-old daughter left behind, because he kept talking about the two nieces that he left. Mm-hmm. One in particular he was very focused on. And, you know, in this case, I got the sense that, you know, like I said, another thing about the confused people, you know, yeah, when they cross over and they're confused, Alzheimer's or dementia.
Yeah.
I kind of disagree with you on that one, because it's not unusual in my experience that those who've had a little bit of dementia or even severe Alzheimer's, when they cross over, they're still confused for some time. And I've had contact with, if you want to call it, other souls who work with these people to help them remember. They actually almost do therapy on the other side, mm-hmm, talking with them, guiding them around to help them to remember about where they came from on that other side, because we all originate over there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And to help them to remember, they... best I
okay,
can
well,
say
yeah, but like if in that contact that the doctors had, they would then still appear confused at that point, right?
Pardon me?
I said they would appear confused at that point. He said they frequently expressed confusion.
Right, but it can go on for some time.
Oh, yes, yes. The Alzheimer's case I referred to was a particular case study, a three-volume study of a husband and wife, where she was... She had already had tastes of the other side and was prepared to go over there. That's unusual. I agree with you that often, in cases of murder as well as suicide, there's a rest period. You're kind of hospitalized. You're kind of, mm-hmm, wakened with warm milk and cookies and gently brought back, like, hey, there is survival. You are still here. Or and often the etheric double, the higher organizational fields that are responsible for the physical, when the physical is so blown apart or is so traumatically murdered or otherwise taken or ravaged by disease, it does take some reparative time on the other side. I absolutely agree with that. But I do want to point out at the same time that I'm saying all this, that if you're still on the line, that's invaluable what you have to offer. And I wish we had Dr. Heath and I had you as a resource also, because you're that wonderful combination of thoughtful and clear-headed, and also have the capacity to mediate communication and have insights of a psychic and mediumistic nature. Very important.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Dr. John Klimo. Hi.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
This program of yours is the best I've ever heard, so God bless you and thank you all. I just have a comment and a sort of question. My comment is that I have a brother who is schizophrenic, and years ago I came to realize through him that the voices that he, and I assume a lot of other schizophrenics hear, certainly are real voices that come from the other side, whereas a lot of medical doctors think it's just quote-unquote voices in their head.
Yes.
The question I have, and it's something that may not be definitively answered, is that a dear woman that I know who was a wonderful artist, and I just adored her, committed suicide over a year ago, and I happen to have met since then a woman who is psychic, and I'm wondering whether I should try to contact her or not. I almost feel like it's selfish of me to do that, but and I'm wondering, should I maybe just pray on her behalf? The reason I'm a little concerned about trying to contact her is that I might get involved in something, and she needs to go grow on her own, and I need to grow on my own. And incidentally, my schizophrenic brother had told me probably 25 years ago that when you leave to the next life, you're going to be back in class again. I'll take the answers off the air. Thank you very much.
All right.
Boy, okay. Boy, that's a lot, an awful lot in what you're saying. I've worked with clinicians, other clinicians, who began as experts on multiple personality disorder, now called dissociative identity disorder, sub or alter personality, supposedly self-generated, who've reached the point that they are convinced that at least some of the sub or alter personalities of some of their clients are separate autonomous beings, who usually they identify themselves that way. And Ralph Allison is one, who's a leading researcher in this area, who eventually got out of the clinical area and pathologizing people, psychopathologizing people, in order to use mediums to communicate to what used to he used to think were part of his clients, but are really separate. Wilson von Dusen is another mental health professional who saw that a lot of the state mental hospital lifetime clients, incarcerated people, their stories of entities and of voices that they took to be separate from themselves was very similar to Swedenborg's own experiences of being taken out of body toward the end of his life and shown heaven and hell and purgatory, fascinating material, and that really many of those subpersonalities supposedly were really communications from the spirit realm, and that some schizophrenic and other hallucinated or clairaudiently heard voices or psychic beings that don't have embodiment, physical embodiment, are really it's not pathology, and the schizophrenia can look like a negative thing to be saddled with, and it is in many ways. But in a sense, they're more porous. There's more of a permeable membrane. They don't have selective capacity to damp down the incoming booming, buzzing confusion from their own unconscious, and also sometimes from an external realm beyond their own psychic material. And
boy, I'll tell you that's one giant can of worms. First time caller line. Time short. You're on with Dr. Klimo. Hi.
Hi, Art. Hi, Dr. Klimo. I got to say, this is a rare opportunity. I normally work Monday through Thursday, and I get to listen to George every night, and I've tried eternally to call in. Mm-hmm. But tonight, for some reason, this is a situation that had to have been.
You're right.
Okay. I was listening to Art earlier talking, and this has been a burning question. My grandma died about 14 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. And Art brought this up earlier about his wife dying and him almost committing suicide. It's a whole long story of what happened. After my grandma died, I was closer to her than I were my parents. They lived across the street from me.
Yeah.
And anyway, that's a whole nother long story. But I was really close to my grandma, and after she died, I contemplated the thought of killing myself. But the fear in me was that in the reincarnation thing, that I might miss getting to see her once I died.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you get what I'm trying to ask there?
Very clearly,
like
yes.
If I killed myself, then she,
yes.
And I even have that fear right now that, say, I'm 47, and, I've got friends that have died already that are my age and whatnot. And my fear is that, 14 years later, has she been reborn somewhere possibly? Or what's my chances of being able to see my grandma in the afterlife?
That's pretty much unknown. She may have reincarnated. She may still be there. She may be unavailable now. She might have moved on and wherever she is and no longer in contact back with the earth plane or with you. But love really conquers all. It is the key link, I think, in the larger reality. We are going to reunite with loved ones. It may not be immediate in the next lifetime. It may be, but I do believe that. My great wish, and from a lot of the evidence I get from this kind of research, it's not forever irrevocably severed and kept apart. So I think there is you can probably plan on that, but when it is. But if we're supposedly immortal spirits or something like that, then we can have the patience for it. By the way, the previous caller, when he said about should I be contacting this person on the other side, I think it's important. I think the prayer, the having good positive thoughts, meditating, sending love is would be about the limit of it, because you can't get caught up in that kind of this life, next life project, and it can pull you away from this life's work.
Okay. Wild card line, you've been waiting a while. You're on the air with Dr. Klimo. Hi.
Hello.
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 Yes, a quick question. If it's possible to opt out of this earthly plane, then it should also be possible to opt out of the whole shebang, to escape the cycle of births and deaths completely and gain just pure oblivion, which you're calling the big fat void, if that's what you want.
I question whether you can totally opt out of everything, as you say, I think you get out of the karmic or the reincarnational wheel cycle by reaching what's called enlightenment, or actually, you know, no longer needing to incarnate or go through this trial and error, soul, slow growth learning, because you sort of arrived. But that's not going into oblivion. That's going into maybe connection to kind of God consciousness, or having arrived and then really being a bodhisattva or a helper to others in the flesh or out of the flesh. And that's, I think that's what we're all bound for eventually, evolutionarily. But to opt out of everything and just say, I don't want reincarnation. I don't want anything. I want to choose that. That's a form of maybe meta or ultimate suicide. That I don't want any more chances. I want to opt out of everything. And I don't think you can do that if you're kind of part of God in human form, in the flesh or out of the flesh, whether you have that option, because you know, God isn't going to kill itself or part of itself or allow that to happen to its own offspring, so to speak.
Oh, thanks.
All right. You're very welcome. Good luck, I guess. Wildcard Line 3, you're on the air with Dr. Klimo, and not a lot of time.
Yes, Art.
Yes.
Yes. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
By the way, that Highwaymen album, it's a great album. The whole thing is. I especially
like
that song.
Yeah.
Except for that last line where Johnny says he could come back as a single drop of rain.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? I talk about an existential tangent there.
Well, there are those who believe that. Anyway.
Right.
I wanted to ask the doctor. He said back in the beginning of the interview, he experienced some channeling instances that he believed to be authentic. And I guess the rest of his experiences of channeling instances, he couldn't really put them in the file of as authentic. But I wanted to ask, doctor, what specifically led you to your belief that these instances were authentic?
Okay.
In other words,
we don't have any more time. But that's a very good question, doctor.
Yeah, evidential messages that are seem to be evidence that they're from the sources that they claim to be from, which is normally mediumistic. Because how do you know whether it's a Pleiadian that's really talking or not? How are you ever going to know that, really? At least at present. But with a discarnate human spirit, if it identifies itself and you knew it when it was alive, or and it gives you detailed information that only it could know and nobody else could know, maybe you didn't even know, that seems to be rather evidential that it's a mediumistic form of channeling that has proof of survival of physical death. But a great deal of channeling, I think the jury just stays out, as I put it. I say agnostic about it. I'm not going to say it isn't or it is, and we don't have the ultimate litmus test to prove it one way or the other.
All right, you are. Well, that's a pretty stringent requirement. So, listen, I cannot tell you how much I have enjoyed doing this program. I've been wanting to do a program like this for a very long time, doctor. So it's been a pleasure having you on the air with me. We'll do it again sometime. In the meantime, I hope people will take a look at your book, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, and, of course, your website. Doctor, thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity, Art, very much. Look forward to talking with you again.
Good night, my friend. Okay, folks, that's it for this weekend, and we return you now, or shortly, that is, to the weekday show. George will, of course, carry on. It's been absolute pleasure and, as always, an honor to guide you through the weekend. Remember, you can get hold of me by email. Love to hear from you. I'm Art Bell, that's ARTBELL, at mindspring.com. Until we meet next weekend from Southeast Asia, can you believe that? The other side of the world, Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. Good night.